Welcome to the Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Welcome to the Freedom Cast. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. Joining me again is Hans von Spakovsky. Hans is the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and a senior legal fellow in the Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies under the Heritage Foundation. To follow his work, please check him out at heritage.org. Well, Hans, welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to have you join me.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me back.
Well, if you're back, we all know what that might mean, and that is that we are in October. Right. I love doing these sessions with you at the beginning of the Supreme Court term and then closing it out at the end of the Supreme Court term in the early summer. So here we are, early October. The Supreme Court is now seated in session again. Before we talk about this current session that just started, I guess they call it the October 2025 session, they were pretty busy over the summer, isn't that right?
Yeah, I think they were busier this summer than I've ever seen them. And what we're talking about is their emergency docket. As you probably know, all these injunctions were being issued against the Trump administration by lower court judges, mostly district court judges, stopping them from doing all kinds of things in the immigration area, trying to terminate federal employees, etc. And was filing emergency appeals with the Supreme Court, asking them to stay or suspend these injunctions issued by the lower courts. And they were largely successful. The Trump administration was largely successful. The Supreme Court kept issuing stays, suspending these lower court injunctions. And I saw more of those orders issued by the court than I've ever seen in my entire career of watching the court.
Hans, when that happens, you know, when a lower court injunction is suspended, what happens with the case then?
Well, the case continues. What an injunction does is, particularly a preliminary injunction, is a judge is telling the government, you cannot proceed with the action that you want to take while this case is going on. You know, if they issue an injunction, the government stops, but the case continues. And the whole point of that is then they both sides submit evidence, they perhaps have a trial, and the judge then will decide substantively whether the government was in the wrong or in the right. Well, what that stay says is, for example, in cases where lower court said, no, you can't fire people at the Department of Education. What the Supreme Court has said is, no, you can fire people at the Department of Education while the trial of this case is ongoing.
So that's an interesting thing that of course, we're all going to continue to follow.
Right.
Let's talk now about the current term and the cases, because many of the cases that the court is going to hear, I mean, they made the docket months ago. In fact, oral arguments are already going to get underway. So those have been on the docket. They've been cases that certainly folks have been, you know, following and waiting to, you know, hear oral arguments on. I know you wrote a piece, just it's hot off the press. Another momentous SCOTUS term is in the offing. And folks who want to read the entire piece can do so by going to heritage.org. Our guest, Hans von Spakovsky, is the author of that piece. Take us through some of the highlights of that and the cases, the big cases that made your news, so to speak.
Sure. Well, they've got 39 cases currently on their docket, but as the term goes on, they'll probably accept even more cases. Probably a big one that could affect, frankly, women and girls all over the country is they took a case out of West Virginia. West Virginia passed a law saying that males who claim that they are women cannot participate in women's sports. You can only participate in a particular sport, whether it's male or female, if you are biologically a male or biologically a female. They took that case. West Virginia was sued by a plaintiff saying, well, that's discriminatory. You can't do that. This case is out of West Virginia, but it's really significant because at least two dozen states have passed similar bans. And so the decision they make, I think, will be crucial, not only to the safety of girls and women competing in sports, but their ability to compete successfully, particularly high school girls who often are competing on teams with the hope of getting a scholarship, you know, to help pay for college. So that's a very, very important case. Another one that they just heard, and it's not the same issue, but similar, is that this is one that, Renan, I know you'd be interested in because it involves First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. And that is Colorado put in a law saying that licensed counselors in the state cannot say anything about sexuality or gender, that they, even if they're asked about it or asked for counseling by one of their clients, unless they tell them the approved ideological view of Colorado. So in other words, if a young person, for example, comes into a counselor and says, you know, it's a boy, and he says, you know, I got feelings that maybe I'm a girl, but I really don't want to do that. I really want to stay a boy. The counselor cannot give any advice or counseling that would do anything to discourage this boy from trying to become a girl. Now, that's clearly a violation of the First Amendment. That case actually has just been argued. And the majority of the court seemed pretty skeptical of what Colorado was advancing in the case.
That's very interesting. It's hard to think that, like, the term just opened and already these cases, you know, are being argued. I know that I believe there was a Postal Service case that was argued this week as well. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think there was. And there was also a case involving elections. Which is very important and could have tremendous effects. You know, as you probably know, there are many, many states that have changed their laws to allow absentee ballots to come in after Election Day and be counted. Mm-hmm. And a member of Congress sued the state of Illinois because he said Illinois has a law that allows ballots to come in, if you can believe this, for 2 weeks after Election Day, and they'll be counted. And he said, look, you can't do that. It violates federal law. Because remember, federal law sets the date of federal elections, if you're running for Congress or the presidency, to the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And he said, look, this violates federal law. Well, kind of unbelievably, the federal court where he filed the case in Illinois said, you don't have standing to even raise this claim. You don't have standing to challenge this law, which was upheld by the Court of Appeals, and that got to the Supreme Court. My reaction to that was, if a candidate who's going to be affected by a state law that talks about how the election will be run doesn't have a claim and can't challenge the law, well, then nobody does. So that was the case, was argued before the Supreme Court also just recently. And I suspect the Supreme Court's going to say, well, of course a candidate has a claim, which means they'll then send it back to the lower courts to determine whether that kind of a state law violates the federal statute setting, you know, the day of federal elections. If they say it does, that'll wipe out these kinds of statutes in probably about two dozen states.
So staying on that issue of elections, because I do think, you know, we're going to see a lot of activity about this time next year as we prep right for 2026. There's another case which you wrote about, the National Republican Senatorial Committee versus the FEC. What's going right on with that case?
That's an interesting case because it was, besides the National Republican Senatorial Committee, J.D. Vance, when he was still senator in Ohio, they filed suit. And what they were filing about was the fact that the federal law that governs federal campaigns has a restriction on political parties that tells them you can only spend a certain amount of money as a political party in coordination with your candidate to support his candidacy, which frankly, it doesn't make a lot of sense when you consider that the whole purpose of political parties is to do what? find candidates, nominate them, and support their candidates. And so the lawsuit says, look, this is a violation of the First Amendment. The Supreme Court previously upheld that restriction, that limit. And this case is asking them to reconsider that, overturn that precedent, and uphold the First Amendment. And I think that may happen because the Supreme Court in the past two decades has more and more leaned towards protecting First Amendment rights and has been very more restrictive on whether or not campaign finance rules like that are constitutional.
So sticking again with that theme, there's another case, and again, you wrote about it recently. Now, this is an interesting one in that oral argument was held last spring, but the justices decided to hold off in issuing a decision on the case and, in fact, have asked for a new round of arguments. Well, first of all, Hans, how often does that happen? Or can you know, is it something you see frequently, have seen happen frequently in your career of following the Supreme Court?
No, that happens almost never. And in fact, the last time I remember it happening was for a very significant case, which was, if you'll recall, the Citizens United case.
Right.
And that was one in which they did not issue a decision at the end of the term, said, nope, we want a second round of arguments. And they rescheduled it and then issued a very significant decision on the First Amendment. Yeah, this case is out of Louisiana. And the issue is in the redistricting process, when can race be used, if at all, without violating the 14th and 15th Amendments? And what happened in Louisiana was that they redistricted, they did their new congressional districts. Out of six districts, one district was what they call a majority-minority, a black district, where black voters could elect their candidate of choice. Black voters and others sued saying, no, we're entitled to a second district because we're like 35% of the state's population. And a federal court said, yeah, you're right. And so the legislature drafted up lines for a second congressional district, again, a black majority district. And after they did that, a new set of voters filed a separate lawsuit saying this second district was drawn based on race. You can't do that. That's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, the one person, one vote clause. And this time, three judges agreed. So Louisiana was caught between, you know, one judge saying, oh, you got to draft up a second district along racial lines, and a different court saying, well, you can't do that because that's discriminatory. So again, this is a very significant case that could affect the redistricting process in every state across the country in the future.
Hans, why do you think they weren't able to issue a decision? I mean, what more might they, I mean, do they give the parties some insight into, okay, we'd like you to further brief this. We'd like to hear oral arguments on this part of that case. Is that kind of what pushed it over into this next term?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. The case last term was mostly arguing about whether there was a violation of the Voting Rights Act in what occurred with this redistricting process. When they issued their order saying, we want to hear a second round of arguments, they asked the parties to brief them on when does the use of race in redistricting potentially violate the 14th and 15th Amendments of the Constitution. So they wanted, basically what they're going to be doing is balancing those two amendments versus the Voting Rights Act, which supposedly says that you can use race if you are remedying current racial discrimination in the voting process. So, they wanted more information and arguments about the constitutional provisions that are relevant here.
And you've mentioned that this is a very significant case. We've seen Texas in the news a lot lately with what is going on with redistricting there. What impact would this Louisiana decision coming from SCOTUS have on what's happening in Texas?
If the court, for example, comes out and says, you can't ever use race when you are drawing district lines, that's the position that Clarence Thomas believes is correct. than districts that were drawn in Texas and other states. It's usually the Democratic Party pushing that for the use of race, because they like having districts with large numbers, for example, of black voters, because so many black voters vote for the Democratic Party. If you can no longer use race, then district lines in places like Texas are going to be drawn based on what? Pure politics. You know, who do voters vote for, and how much can we gerrymander the state, whether it's Republicans doing it or Democrats doing it?
So coming back to something else you noted, 39 cases on the docket already. Is that a high number for the start of a term? And do you anticipate this being one of the busier terms of the court? I mean, I think the trend has been fewer cases of late, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, no, the number of cases they handle has been going down, but usually they handle anywhere between 60 and 80 cases. So no, I expect more cases to come in. And we shouldn't get off without mentioning the fact that two very, very important cases are before the court. As you know, President Trump, when he came in, he has fired the heads of various so-called independent agencies. For example, he fired Rebecca Slaughter. She's a commissioner on the Federal Trade Commission. He also fired Lisa Cook, who is on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. And he's fired commissioners at other agencies, too. The cases of Rebecca Slaughter, the FTC commissioner, and Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve, they have contested that. They have said, you can't fire us. And those cases are now before the U.S. Supreme Court. And those cases involve a 90-year-old precedent called Humphrey's Executor back in 1935. And back then what happened was Roosevelt tried to actually fire a commissioner at the FTC, and the Supreme Court said, well, you can't do that because Congress put in restrictive rules saying you can't fire an FTC commissioner except for cause, like malfeasance in office or neglect of their duties. The Trump administration is arguing, and many people support that that's an unconstitutional violation of the president's power as the head of the executive branch to supervise it. Because if he can't fire, for example, a commissioner running the FTC, then he has no supervisory control whatsoever over this agency, which is carrying out executive branch duties. A lot of people think there's a very good possibility that the Supreme Court actually will overturn that 90-year-old precedent because they say it was wrongly decided. And if so, then that will mean that President Trump and future presidents will have the ability to fire and then appoint someone else to run these many agencies. Just think how many we have, Renee. The FTC, the FEC, the SEC, the NLRB, I mean, the acronyms in Washington from all these supposedly independent agencies, it's so large, I can't even remember them all.
Well, that's one we are definitely going to watch. What's the other one you've got your eye on?
Another one, very important, involves Second Amendment rights. The Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court in Hawaii, basically upheld this law that virtually outlaws concealed carry permits in the state of Hawaii. I mean, you just can't get them. And despite the fact that that clearly violated U.S. Supreme Court precedent on the Second Amendment, they actually cited to the fact that, well, we're the Aloha state. We believe in peace, and therefore we can restrict Second Amendment rights, which is got to be one of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen by a state Supreme Court. Anyway, the Supreme Court took that case, and I think there's like almost no likelihood that they'll do anything other than throw out this restrictive law in Hawaii and overrule the state Supreme Court there.
So lots of very interesting cases that we'll be watching throughout the entire term. Hans, we'd love to have you come back as we progress over the next couple of months through some of these cases to give us more of an update. Our guest has been Hans von Spakovsky. He's the manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and a senior legal fellow in the Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. You can follow him and his work at heritage.org. Hans, as always, it's a pleasure having you join me on the program. I thank you for your time today.
Sure, Renee. Thanks for having me.
Have a wonderful afternoon.